Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. My guest tonight is Ole Damegaard. He is an independent investigator, author, and former journalist. He has devoted 30 years to research and exposing some of the biggest conspiracies in modern history. He is the author of Coup d'etat in Slow Motion, The Murder of Olaf Palme, a book that is now available in two volumes from Amazon. Coup d'etat in Slow Motion investigates the assassination of Swedish Prime Minister Olaf Palme in 1986 and reveals the links that event has to other political events like the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., Che Guevara, Salvador Allende, and John Lennon, as well as the sinking of the Estonia, a maritime disaster that took the lives of 852 people in 1994. Tonight we're going to discuss Ole's theory that most of the major terrorist attacks and political assassinations, well, pretty much since World War II, have been the work of one small group or secret team doing the dirty work of the ruling elite. Ole, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, thank you. Thank you for having me on, Tim.
Thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else you want to add to that intro? Did I miss anything? Did I explain it properly?
No, great. It's fine.
Okay, great. Well, in your various interviews and lectures and writings, you name names, list the members of this network, and you present evidence of how these assassinations and false flag events, you know, how they've been executed, but you also assert that this is a network that is not just a matter of unpleasant history, but still exists and continues to do its murderous activities to this day. So how do you want to explain this? Do you want to maybe explain how it relates to maybe some of these events, or just get right into it? What's the best way to introduce this to our listeners?
Well, what I can say is that I think for as long as we look back in history in modern time, you know, the last couple of thousand years, there's always been a small group of people who have thought that they've called themselves the elite, and they've figured out that they are so much better than the rest of us and how to control us so that they can have a life in super luxury and the rest of us will be like slaves. And that has been the plan that has been going from generation to generation in many different areas. And the way they found out, I think it was the old Romans that came up with a template of how to do this, how to manipulate the masses into accepting more or less anything and living like slaves, but not really understanding that we were actually serving the few. And the way that this is carried out and has always been is through fear. It is has been all over. During all of these years, if there haven't been an enemy, an outer enemy, then this elite few, or they call themselves the elite few, have created boogeymen to scare the living bejesus out of the population so that we will obey, that we will, for our own security or our own safety, as they claim, we will do whatever is needed to tend to this outer enemy. But this outer enemy has, what I found out over all of these years is that so many times it is a created outer enemy. It is created fear mongering, fear porn that has been pushed upon us to control us. And when I started many, many years ago, I had no idea, absolutely no idea, that many of these so-called terror events and these assassinations, that they had any kind of connection. I thought they were totally separate events. But over the years, I've kept bumping into the same names again and again and again and again. And I, as well as quite a few other researchers who have really dug into this type of these type of areas, are more or less agreeing on that what we're seeing carried out in the world today, and which has been carried out for many, many years, is the agenda of the so-called New World Order, a small elite group that are trying to get the global control over this beautiful planet. And the way that they have done this, or are doing it, is through, once again, fear again. And this fear has been, in modern times, created in the form of false flag terror. Terror is the tool of these times. And the people who have been standing away of their agenda have been taken care of. And this is where we see these top political assassinations and the elimination of people who want different future from them, because their future, what they are really trying to create, the famous they, are death and destruction, total control of the rest of us. And people like Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, JFK, many other, Lady Diana, John Lennon, people who have been standing up for the beautiful aspect of life, when they have come to a position where their popularity have made them into a major threat of changing this global agenda of death, they have been taken care of. And so many beautiful individuals have been eliminated. And in my opinion, this elite few have used the same team of assassins for decades as a core group, absolutely not the only ones, but they have been a core group through the last 50 years at least. And the name of this group is Operation 40.
Yes. What you're saying is that from time to time, various celebrities, people of notoriety, maybe political leaders, dissidents, or even people within the system somehow break out of the mold and are then challenge the system, and because of their notoriety, their fame, they're a spur under the saddle of the ruling elite, so they have to be taken care of. What event led you into this, and when did you first start to develop, started to seeing the patterns that led you to believe in this network?
Like you mentioned before, I used to work as a journalist, and in the mid-80s, around 84 or something like that, 83, 84, I started becoming very, very interested in the JFK assassination. This was way before Oliver Stone's film and so on. So it was very hard to get information except from books and so on. So what I did, well, I traveled to England, I traveled to the States, I did what I could to get hold of books that weren't that easy to find. I tried to track down people and so on. But it came to a point, for some reason, I almost got obsessed with trying to find out what actually happened, because the JFK assassination is, I would say, if you look from their point of view, it's one of the masterpieces of how one of these assassinations are carried out. And this has resulted in us being confused to this very day. I mean, there's so many theories out there, and still I don't know anyone who knows the whole complete truth about that assassination. But that, since it was so incredibly intricate and multi-layered and complex, I started writing a book just for my own sake, trying to understand what exactly happened, because it was so confusing. Because, like, for instance, in one book, one individual could be described with a lot of credibility as a CIA operative. Then in another book, the very same individual was described as a member of the mob, a hitman for the mob. And then in another book, all of them very credible, he was an FBI informer and employed by the FBI, and so on. And I found that extremely confusing until I started seeing that they were actually true, all three of them. That sometimes it is possible that somebody is working for the CIA, but deeply involved with the mob, and paid off or used as an informer by the FBI, Secret Service, and these agencies, and that these different aspects of a controlling elite were actually sides of the same coin, just different angles of the same thing. And once I started seeing that that was actually possible, and how closely the CIA, the mob, the FBI was working hand in hand in different operations, depending on what kind of things were needed to be carried out, and in what territory, if it was abroad or inside the nation's borders, and so on. It slowly started getting a little more clear how the whole thing had been carried out with JFK. Then that took me into the Robert Kennedy assassination and Martin Luther King assassination. I started diving really deep into the Abraham Lincoln assassination as well. And after a while, or after thousands and thousands of hours, trying to understand what was going on, I started seeing that it was almost like there was some kind of template being used as a bullet point list of how to carry out one of these top political assassination, how to eliminate somebody very popular without the population understanding what actually happened and making them believe that it was the deed of a lone crazy guy. So over the years, I started, and also while writing this book just for myself, I started to sort of pinpoint this template. Not that I ever found it in writing, but it was just like the similarities were so strong that I started getting sort of a clear idea how they were doing these things. And then in 1986, the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, was shot down in the streets of Stockholm. And I was born in Denmark, but grew up in Sweden. And I believed that I lived in a country where I could trust the police. There were very little crime. I didn't think there were more or less any corruption at all. At least that was what we were being told. I trusted the courts, I trusted politicians and so on, because that was, we were being pumped with this propaganda that we lived in this beautiful democracy, the best in the world, where everything was clean and you could trust the authorities and so on. And then, after a year or so after the assassination of Olof Palme, the exact same thing started happening in Sweden as had happened exactly after the other assassinations. So I thought, my God, is this possible? Is it really possible that an assassination in Sweden, that the authorities were claiming to be the deed of a lone crazy guy, a Swede, that could follow the same template? So I compared with the other major cases, and I said, if this is following the template, then I checked JFK, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and so on. But all of these things has happened in this Swedish case as well. Is it possible? And if so, what will be the next step in Sweden? And hold behold, that was exactly what happened. It followed the exact same template in Sweden as 23 years earlier in Dallas, Texas, and so on. And it just blew me away, because at that point, it was like somebody had pulled away the rug underneath my feet, you know, and it was like a black hole that just opened itself, because I thought, oh my God, I have been taken for such a ride my whole life, because if this is true, then I'm looking at the same type of corruption and political, very cruel, brutal execution in Sweden as well as in the other countries. And how on earth can they follow the same template if they are not somehow connected? So from that point, I just felt I need to do something about this. So I quit my job. I moved to Stockholm. I took a job as a bus driver and a cleaner, and devoted my whole time to try and track down what actually happened in Sweden. And that ended up like more or less 12 years of very intense investigative work, where I tracked down assassins, I tracked down foreign agents, I tracked down, I would say more or less all the people that carried them out on a street level, because this is absolutely not a Swedish assassination. This was carried out in military style, ambush, very skillfully carried out with the cooperation of some core element in the Swedish government, in the Swedish police, in the Swedish secret police, and so on. But the assassination itself were ordered by, I would claim, the same power structure that was behind the other, like JFK, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the exact same power structure, global power structure. And I was just a Mr. Absolute Nobody. I lived on my own out in a suburb, just devoting my whole time. I kept a very, very low profile, because very early on I discovered that if you start digging into these things, and especially before the internet came along, if you started touching these very touchy areas, you would end up dead or suicided or in a car accident or a heart attack. There was so, I started seeing the exact same thing in Sweden as had happened around the other assassinations. A long, long line of dead people that officially had nothing to do with that crime. But once you started seeing the pattern, how they were connected, it was extremely frightening. So I got involved with a small group of, they were called the private investigators, but this was just normal people, very concerned citizens that was extremely saddened and frightened about what happened in Sweden right in the front of our eyes. And nobody reacted to what had happened. Nobody understood. And I would say nobody to this, or very few to this very day, actually understood what happened in Sweden that day. This is also why my book is called Coup d'etat in slow motion. It was a coup d'etat in Sweden, but it was carried out. Boom, the shots were fired, and then nothing happened, nothing happened, nothing. Or very, very, very slowly, 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 slowly. And then after a year or two, the whole thing from a free nation and then a nation after a coup d'etat had taken place, but so slowly, in slow motion, that the population did not notice. And if you compare Sweden today from what it was before that assassination, it's a totally different nation, I tell you. Very, very different. And in the end, unfortunately, two of the people I was involved with, two of my friends, got murdered or died in very mysterious ways. I had a visit as well when I was not home, but they went through my whole apartment, turning it upside down, and I just felt that it's not worth it. I don't want to end up a statistic. So my girlfriend and I decided we don't really belong in Sweden either. So we moved, and just a few months later, we were living in Spain, and we've been living here since the year 2000. So. But it's a very, very scary, it's like the area where I live my life now. It's like in the middle of a minefield where I'm doing everything I can to expose where the mines are, who have put them there, how they're charged, why they're there, and so on. But with these minefields, it's like if you step on it, you don't notice that you've stepped on a mine until it's too late. So it's a tricky area, and I found early that there are different ways of protection. Either you go stealth, you go totally anonymous under the radar and try to do, that was what I did for many years, trying to do as much research as possible, but with nobody really understanding who I was or what I was doing, or get the spotlight on you. Because if something happens and you have the spotlight on you, that will then amplify and the whatever you said will give it more power that it was true, that there was a reason why they took care of you. So they're very aware of creating what they see as martyrs, somebody that stands up. So a person who dies for the truth can be much more powerful than the individual itself, an individual in the individual that can be corrupted or bribed or whatever. But once they're dead, if they turn into an icon, that can make major problems for these power structures. So they avoid that. So I kept a very low profile until 2012. And then I just felt I need to do something now. And I went out. And at that time, I just pumped out my book for free. I think it was downloaded some 30,000 times. And spread all over the world. I asked everyone that to download it, to make multiple copies, spread it out to friends and families, whatever, so that it could not be stopped anymore. And then at the same time, I started doing radio interviews and sometimes TV interviews and lectures in different countries and so on. And now I've done, I don't know how many hundreds of interviews, and I've done lectures all over Europe and in the US, and now it's starting in the former Eastern Bloc as well, which is really interesting, like Poland, Serbia, Germany, East Germany, these areas. And I had an incredible honor just a few months ago being awarded the Prague Peace Prize, which was, for me, absolutely fantastic because it was a peace prize. It was not a prize for the best investigator or something like that. It was a peace prize because, in my opinion, if that is what we need to have as the main intention to create peace in this world. And this is where I believe that this so-called global elite, there's so few of them, really, there are so few, we are so many, but that this small group that are in key positions in so many powerful positions on a global scale are behind so much mayhem, I tell you, on Mother Earth here. And so whatever direction we take to expose them from whatever area, if it's GMO or chemtrails or assassinations or vaccines, we come back to the same core group that are behind the agenda that just wants to destroy all of the beauty. So, I, for one, is not going to give up. I'm going to put my whole attention on solving this. And I think we're very close to the tipping point now.
Yeah. Saturating the airwaves or the internet and getting out there, getting your name known, is probably the best insurance policy at this point against any untoward action or being taken out or anything like that. A couple observations. One thing I find interesting, and I find this very common in people who devote their lives to researching this, is they either they're relegated or they decide to take sort of menial jobs so they can make ends meet, but at the same time reserve their brain power for researching this. So they take other jobs. And another reason why that is you can't have a job of any significance within the system and be vocal on these issues without losing your job. And that's one of the control mechanisms that that the ruling elite have over people. They have a mortgage to pay, a family to support, and so they want to keep the blinders on and make sure they don't step out of line. And people are more constrained than they want to know, because people are fearful not only of retribution, but isolation or being pushed onto the margins of society by propagating or spreading these theories regarding some of these events, because you're no longer reading from the script. I find that that's a common thing I notice in the alternative research community. But you mentioned obviously what you saw in the Olof Palme thing, what you uncovered in your research, was that this the corruption that you might have found out about in the Kennedy assassination and some other events was global in scale, that it also infected your country of Sweden, and it was much more vast than you had previously suspected. And you mentioned, you name Operation 40 as, I guess, as a tangible representation or something we can sink our teeth into and say, this is an example of this network. Operation 40, do you want to explain what Operation 40 was or is?
Yeah, for sure. Operation 40 is the name this group was created under. As soon as they were sort of in the process of carrying these things out, their name changed over the years. They changed name for each different operation and so on. But this Operation 40 is the name that has been labeled to this group. But it was in the late 50s, early 60s, when under the regime of President Dwight Eisenhower, there was some people from the elite who got together with tops in the CIA, like the Alan Dulles. You had people from the CIA, old gray wolves like E. Howard Hunt, who was later very famous for the Watergate burglar, his involvement in that. But he was extremely involved in many, many, many military takeovers in Latin America and getting rid of presidents, arranging for coup d'etats in many countries. He was also very deeply involved in the assassination of JFK as one of the architects. There was him, there was Ted Shackley, another one, extremely involved in I don't know how many assassinations globally. His name was Ted Shackley, also known as the Blonde Ghost. He was later the director for COVID operation for the Western Hemisphere. And his predecessor, who also was involved in Operation 40, was David Attlee Phillips. Now, David Attlee Phillips was also deeply involved in the assassination of JFK and also the controller of Lee Harvey Oswald, no one less than Lee Harvey Oswald. And one of his other people that he was the controller of was James Files, the claimed shooter behind the picket fence. So anyway, these three were, they had meetings with Alan Dulles, Dwight Eisenhower, Nixon was there as well. He was vice president at the moment, at the time. And Richard Nixon was then given the task to create a team of assassins, of top assassins that could be used anywhere, at any time, against anyone, where... And this went under the name of Operation 40. To start with, they were about 80 people. There was one woman, Marita Lawrence, and then about 80 men, where many of them were being trained in anything from extortion to bribery to propaganda to infiltration to also. But there was about 20-odd people that were being specially educated as top assassins. They went down to E. Howard Hunt, Ted Shackley, and David Attlee Phillips. They went down to Miami in Florida, where this was the biggest operations center for the CIA at that time. And they were very much involved in JM Wave, what was called JM Wave at that time. And what they did was they went and they started recruiting mostly exiled Cubans that had just fled Cuba when Castro took over with the revolution there. So the people they recruited were former people from the military, from the secret Cuban police, from the Air Force, from military and so on. Very, very brutal people that were disciplined and good at killing. So these people were then taken, they were trained in Lake Pontchartrain, north of Louisiana, north of New Orleans. They were trained down in the Everglades in Florida, in everything from jungle warfare to whatever, anything that could kill someone. But they were also trained down in Guatemala, all types of different ways of killing people. And then to start with, Operation 40 was aimed at Fidel Castro because at that point he was the main threat. And they had companies like United Fruit, Standard Oil, these type of companies were there funding and sponsoring these operations. Also because it was in their interest to be able to use a team like that without anyone understanding what had happened, because this was ultra secret. I mean, super, super secret. It's only many, many years later that we're now able to expose this group. But one thing that is of extreme importance is that the paymaster for this group, the one that funneled the funds into this group, was a young man by the name of George Herbert Walker Bush. And when you look over the years what this group has been taking care of or been involved in, it is just incredible. And they have followed George Bush Sr. along his side through his whole career, helping him to carry out so, so many assassinations and coup d'etats and black ops. And so it's incredible. And I'm a personal friend of Chip Tatum, who is he's a CIA whistleblower. He became a whistleblower in the early 90s. He was a D-cover agent for 25 years. He was a black op operative. He was one of the pilots, black helicopter pilots, you know, these black unidentified helicopters that are used in many of these secret operations. He was one of them. He was also one of the pilots in the Iran-Contras operation, where weapons were stolen at the National Guard and then sent out to countries in big military planes or medevac planes down to El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, countries like that, where they were arming the Contras, that was their creation, to eliminate these democracies down, these left-wing democracies down there. And when these planes returned empty, they were filled with cocaine without the pilot knowing really what it was they were transporting, because they were in big coolers. The pilots thought that they were, blood plasma, these other types of this. But it was later discovered that this was what is now called the Iran-Contra scandal, where it turned out that these planes were transporting in tons and tons and tons of cocaine that were being received at airports. There was especially one little airport airstrip that was very, very central in this operation, in Mena, Arkansas, a little town, and with a little airstrip where these massive big planes came in, and where the drugs were received and then distributed by no one less than the governor of that state at that point, William
Clinton.
Sorry, God, I got a total.
Hey, it's not your. It's not your country. I don't.
Anyway, Bill Clinton. He was the governor there, and he was. I mean, when you look at him and Hillary, this is not to discredit anyone, but when you look at it, you investigate these people. They are career criminals on a scale that is absolutely incredible.
And also, another point is, when you get below the retail or the street level politics or electoral politics, that these crime families, the Clinton crime family, are actually in business with another crime family like the Bush family.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time. The Bush family is like, you can call it a crime dynasty, I would call it. Mm-hmm. Clinton is like a low scale criminal that got invited in through Bush. He was then invited to the Bilderberg meeting because of his looks and his that he was totally corrupted and easily controlled by that time, and then selected as the next president. I'm now talking about Bill. He looked good. He had shaken hands with Kennedy. He was, the thing is with these people, they need people in the presidential arena that works in media. But they're only there as a nice front cover. They have no real power. The real power is behind them. They're just a cute face, like a glossy cover. And I would humbly suggest that JFK was the last real elected president, even though there were some very weird things around that election as well, where through his father they were, they used the mob to get some very important votes, because the election between JFK and Nixon was the closest ever. I mean, they were so tight, but JFK won. And the people that brutally slaughtered him, the power structure that killed him that day, have stayed in power ever since. It's just the presidents have just been, like I said before, nice front figures, just another pretty face on the cover. And that is why nothing changes. It's the Democrats, it's whatever. It's the same. It doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat. It's the same. The same agenda is carried out, just under a different title.
Yeah, these events, false flag events or assassinations, I think Kennedy, 1963, there's a certain inflection point in American society and American culture. That's sort of when the 60s began and all the turmoil began, and that's can't be traced back to the murder of the president. The same way you talk about Olaf Palme in 1986, that being sort of an inflection point. And also 2001, September 11th, being an inflection point where things seem to change. Although, obviously the corruption is there prior to those events, but these are, I guess you could say, watershed events that change the political landscape, that lead us to a next phase of their operation or their plans or something. So
you can see it's very easy if you compare with the mob, how the mob is working. You have one godfather and another family over here. They start fighting, then one family just eliminates the top of the other families. They just knock them out, put themselves in a leading position, in a power position, and from then on they rule. They take over the different territories and they rule. It's exactly the same here. They took care of Kennedy. They knocked out them, and then when when Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King finally, after, I mean, 4 years later, 5 years later, when the world was slowly starting to get their breath back after having been in total shock for some years, when they started coming up to a position where they would be a threat to this elite, then they were taken out. There was only 60 days in between the elimination of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. And I believe had Robert Kennedy been elected president, the chances of him having Martin Luther King as vice president is very, very big. And they wanted to stop that at all costs. So they knocked them out. They knocked out Malcolm X. And since then, it's just been straightforward.
That's right.
And you have 9/11. I mean, like 10 years to on the day before the events in 2001, when that happened, George Bush Sr. went forward. He had the first presentation of the New World Order, saying, this is what's going to happen. And surest thing, I mean, they have followed the agenda and just carried it out.
Now, some of these events, of course, you mentioned the Kennedy assassination sort of as being the issue, the event that got you involved in these matters. Now we have among this this group, you have people like, you mentioned Ted Shackley and E. Howard Hunt, and of course he links in with the Watergate. So Watergate break-in and conspiracy, and that attaches that event to the Kennedy assassination, because some people look at the Watergate scandal and the subsequent resignation of President Nixon as sort of a coup in and of itself. Because if you look at the principal actors in that in Watergate, they all had ties to intelligence, whether it's George Bush, E. Howard Hunt, Frank Sturgis. Yeah. Even Leon Jaworski, I think, even the reporter, you know, right? Bob Woodward, Naval Intelligence, correct?
But this is what you will see. You will see that many times we're looking at a theater play being played out. And I would, you know, like the Watergate burglary, there was a reason. Nixon wanted to stop all kinds of evidence showing that he had, about his involvement in the JFK assassination, mm-hmm. because he was involved as well. So was George Bush. I mean, they were even there in Dallas the very same day.
Yes.
Nixon was there for Pepsi Cola or Coca-Cola, but they were all there at the Clint Murchison Ranch the night before, Nixon as well, where they were giving a green light for this operation. Mm-hmm. And Nixon was getting super paranoid about this leaking out. So he ordered this burglary to try and get hold and stop some of this evidence from getting out there. But it seems like the Watergate burglary or the scandal was a multi-layered conspiracy there as well, because it seems like Bush was in the background again, Bush Sr., and this was his way of getting rid of Nixon.
It was his father, Prescott Bush, which sponsored Richard Nixon, got him into politics.
But this is the Bush, I'm talking about the Bush dynasty. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have the old players like Prescott Bush. His dad as well was very much involved in getting the First World War started. Then Prescott Bush through the Zimmerman telegram, fake telegram. Then you had Prescott Bush, who was funneling funds to Adolf Hitler and the Nazi war machine, together with the Dulles brothers, John Foster and Alan Dulles. You know, and then he was even almost charged with treason after the Second World War. And then came the next step after the Second World War, and where Prescott Bush was part of getting Dwight Eisenhower. I think they were playing golf before, and he was sort of the suggestion of Prescott Bush to get him into as a president, because he could be used, and Nixon as well. Prescott Bush was controlling Nixon as well. But we're not talking about Prescott being like one of the top leaders. Absolutely not. He's a tool on a lower level, but manipulating the players. And then in came George Bush Sr. He came in and he became a very, very powerful player through his whole life, I would say. Then you got Boy George, absolute joke I mean, mm-hmm. no brains, no nothing, just a pretty face again. To be able to leave George Bush Sr. in control behind the scenes. Jeb Bush, his brother, just a part of a drug dealer as well. He was, I know Chip Tatum flew drugs to him as well, where George Bush Jr. and Jeb Bush was part of receiving the drugs in Miami. I mean, we're looking at, when it comes to the Bush family, the dynasty of the Bush family, we're talking super, super, super criminals. And I tell you, I cannot exaggerate how much they have on their conscience and how much blood has followed in their steps.
And the key there is in 1980, when he was able to get him, George H.W. was able to get himself on the ticket with Ronald Reagan. And, of course, then Reagan's elected. And Chris Bush is involved in the October surprise with Casey. That's what some researchers say their research bears out. And then, of course, in March, 2 months into Reagan's presidency, there's this assassination attempt.
You got Bush in the background there as well.
Yeah.
You got Bush in the background. Yeah. Do you know that the thing is that you, like... John Hinckley, the guy who's blamed for this whole thing and who was a controlled, like a Manchurian candidate as well. When you really look into that assassination attempt, you will see that the numbers of shots fired is accounted for and not the shot hit Ronald Reagan. And he was actually hit with not a normal bullet, but like a small cylinder-shaped, very like a razor-shaped thing that was fired by a totally different type of gun with compressed air. That was fired from, I tell you, it's almost like identical, a grassy knoll near on the other side of where Reagan came out from the building. The whole thing was prepared the same way, you know, the limousine that was waiting that normally is parked right outside the entrance or exit of whatever building, you know, they have, it's extremely important within like 8 or 10 inches how this vehicle should be parked so that the Secret Service have total control and everything, you know, so they can just walk straight in and with as a minimum exposure as possible of the... Here, when Reagan came out, the vehicle was in a totally wrong position. The Secret Service people were coming out, not surrounding him the way they should, to making him totally open for that one as well. And then in the background, George Bush again.
And another parallel to the Kennedy assassination.
The thing is, with these things, when I say there's a bullet point list, like a template using, I'm not saying only on a street level, because sometimes or many times the way it's carried out on a street level varies. But normally you're talking about triangular fire, multiple shooters, multiple getaway cars, and so on. But the template, the main ingredients is that it will be blamed on a lone crazy guy. That is one of the ingredients. The reason they want him alone and crazy is because alone, because then by law there's no conspiracy and you don't have to look into it. And crazy, because then there's no motive either. So especially if this guy's get killed right away, boom, it's case closed, thank you, and goodbye.
Mm-hmm. So of course, with Hinckley, he is the son of the business partner of George H.W. Bush, right?
Yeah, it's George H.W. Yeah.
He's tied into World Vision, which ties him to Mark David Chapman and the Lenin assassination. Because Hinckley's father was headed up World Vision, correct? I mean that CIA front. That's another pattern that people point out. And we're not. I guess the public isn't supposed to take notice that the son of a political supporter and business partner of George Bush is the one that allegedly pulls the trigger to try to kill the president. And we're supposed to just say nothing to see here, move along, right?
So. Yeah, and then who had dinner with Bush's son that evening?
Yeah, exactly. And that was reported once or twice and then forgotten. And that's how these things are handled, you know. But you mentioned a couple of these events. We go from these assassinations, okay, and maybe these multi-layered conspiracies like Watergate to some of this false flag terrorism, which suggests another – sort of operation. Of course, with the Kennedy assassination, you do get a traumatic event. It is filmed for everyone to see, and it's on television, and there's the trauma behind that, which might have played some part in the overall plan. But with some of these terrorist events, it's sort of a not only is it a these assassinations are maybe planned to get rid of someone who's inconvenient, who's in the way of the New World Order's agenda. I mean, there's some other events. I mean, I was reading about the guy Mattei, who ran the Italian oil company, and he was negotiating in the early 60s, negotiating better deals with some of these oil-producing countries, some of these third-world countries, you know, that the Seven Sisters had control over. And he was going behind them and working out better deals with them. And, of course, then what his plane crashes. there was a banker in Germany in the late 80s, Herrhausen, I think is his name?
Alfred Herrhausen.
Yeah, and he was talking about third-world debt relief, some sort of, you know, global jubilee, get rid of all this debt that had been imposed upon, you know, on the third world by the Rockefellers, as Henry Kissinger laid out in National Security Study Memorandum 200, 1974, you load the countries down with debt, you use it, you know, part of this economic hitman model to rob these countries blind. And he's suggesting that maybe this debt should be forgiven because it isn't workable anymore. And what happens to him? He's assassinated, supposedly, by communists, which relates us back to Gladio. So we have these assassinations. We have, of course, what's the evidence for this? You've talked about Gladio. You might want to mention Gladio and explain that, and the importance of maybe their involvement in some of these false flag events and some of these staged events. Do you want to get into that, how it relates to your research?
For sure. I mean, Gladio is extremely important in this whole thing. For those who don't know what Gladio is that we're talking about the same people that created more or less Operation 40, that were part of many of these coup d'etats in Latin American countries and so on. They, in the early 50s and so on, and the NSA and so on, they, you know, NSC and the CIA and so on, what they were trying to do, they said that after the Second World War, there was a threat from the East at that point, from invasion. I mean, the thing that at that point was the concern was Russia. And so somebody came up with the idea, why don't we create like a ghost army that no one has any idea about even exists? We make it consist of hundreds and hundreds of small cells of 8 to 10 people. People involved in security, military, police, these type of people, the home brigade and so on as well, where we will supply them with hidden or buried fuel supplies, weapon supplies, radio equipment, everything that is needed, vehicles and so on. And all of this whole network, nobody will know the whole a network of very few people, but these cells will then be in contact with each other, but only through radio and so on. So that everything would be, when it comes to equipment, everything would be underground, buried down, so nobody would see it. Nobody would know who was involved in this whole thing. Not even themselves would know the whole thing. And then the idea was that should Russia invade any of these countries, we're talking NATO countries now, the member of NATO, should anyone or should Russia invade any of these countries, then the royal family or the leaders of that country, the top of the society, could then leave the country very fast, go to London, and from London then activate the resistance movement in the country, so that within one boom, the whole resistance movement would be in location, armed, with equipped with vehicles, fuel, radio, everything would be on standby and just could be activated in one go. And when you look at it, the plan, I think it's a brilliant plan when you think of it. But, and so they made it a mandatory part of being a member of NATO to create what was called Gladio. Gladio is the Italian name of this whole thing. Every country had their own name of it. Like in Sweden, it was called Stay Behind. In some countries, Rear Guard, and so on. But anyway, So, and by the way, Sweden is supposed to have been a neutral country, and this was created in 1954. So when you look at it, Sweden has been part of NATO ever since then. Anyway, so, but what happened was that we're now talking about a creation of a ghost army with hundreds of thousands of people in Europe and other areas being part of this hidden network. So after a few years, in the beginning of the 60s and so on, it came to a point where this ghost army, there was no real need for it because the threat from the east wasn't that big anymore. So somebody came up with the idea saying, listen, we've got this amazing, very, very efficient death tool here. Why don't we use it for something more productive? So they came up with a plan called the Strategy of Tension, the Strategy of Tension. And the idea was to create fear among the population by random terror, by random terror acts where they just attacked everything from supermarkets to blowing up train stations to just killing. The idea was that the violence should be random so that everybody would be terrified. And then to start with, they aimed it at the countries where there was a left-wing type of government. These countries were being attacked for most foremost. But then it just spread, and they started using them for assassinations. They started using them for all type of dirty deeds. Then in, I think it was 1990 or 91, a massive scandal erupted in Italy where this was exposed. And it turned out that there was more than 10,000 people involved in Gladio in Italy. It was a massive scandal. And then that started spreading from country to country in Europe, where one by one by one, this whole thing was exposed. And so they said, this is horrible, this is horrible, and it will never happen again. We promised to stop, but they did not. I mean, it's just carried on under another name and so on. So the whole thing is still in motion and being used to this very day.
And you can say, I guess what we're seeing today is sort of a continuation of what occurred in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, as they called it, the strategy of tension. This idea is you shift the politics or shift the culture through a series of traumatic events that appear to be random or terrorist attacks, shootings, random shootings, mass shootings, killings. And with the example of Gladio, with the precedent of Gladio, we can look at more current events and some of the anomalies and questions regarding some recent events here in the States and also over in Europe, pulling off these various events. Now, they've gone from, I think you've mentioned in talks, that they've gone to have events that may have some real victims, real damage, real injury, real death, to even faking events, to staging events. And this suggests I guess you could say a subsequent development to this tactic. I guess you've theorized that this is a way of pulling off event, getting the benefit of the trauma without the liability of real victims and real loved ones who want answers, correct?
I would say yes. We're back to the old Romans again, where another one of these major tools on how to control the population is an old one called problem, reaction, solution. The few in power secretly create a problem to get the emotional outcry from the population. It's very important that it's an emotional outcry of fear and panic, because they do not want us to use our mind and critical seeing and so on. So they secretly create a problem to get the emotion from us. The emotion they want is like, oh my God, oh my God. And then we, terrified, turn towards the people that we think are there to protect us, not understanding that it's actually them who have created the problem. So we turn towards our governments and so on and say, please, please, we're under attack. We need security, help us, help us. And then the people who are the ones behind the problem say, of course, but with the, I mean, now the nation is under attack. This is such a horrible time, and the only way we can deal with this is by, and boom, there comes the solution. And the solution of these events every single time is something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. Problem, reaction, solution. So it is extremely important when you look at these so-called terror events and so on to see who benefits from us freaking out. Who benefits from this? What is the solution that we're being offered? And I tell you, every single time they point at someone who screams Allah Akbar, or you know, who forgets their driver's license in the car, or I mean, it's now it's come to a point where it's almost ridiculous. We have problem, reaction, solution. In the States, it is mass shootings. That's the trend of the times, because you are the only ones with guns. And they, the elite few, are extreme cowards. They're not warriors. They're not brave people at all. Their talents is manipulative, to be able to manipulate, smile while you kill, backstabbing, these type of things. Not brave people. So they want to get the weapons away from the population so that they can just come take over with no resistance. So I'm totally pro-peace, non-violence, and so on. At the same time, I say to the people in the U.S., do not give up the guns, because that is what they try. So in the U.S., where all of these false flags are, it is the aim is to get rid of the weapons. So they want the weapons to be the problem. So this is why every time there's a so-called alleged mass shooting or something like that, I mean, you're the only ones who have mass shootings, more or less. The thing will be that there's a lone crazy guy who goes and kills a lot of people. So the solution then, I would say, if he's alone and crazy, let's focus on mental health. You know, let's see how can we help these mentally deranged people or whatever the problem is, since they apparently need to go out and kill a lot of people. So let's stop this killing by getting better mental health, psychiatrists, whatever. No. That's not what we're being served. The problem is a lone crazy guy. Oh my God, somebody's being killed. It's always women and children. Old guys doesn't work. It's you need the emotion going. So it's young children, blood and devastation. And then you will hear them say, well, the only solution is to ban weapons, ban automatic weapons, ban this, ban that. In Sweden, there's no, you don't have automatic weapons. The population is not allowed to have guns. So there they're trying to make knives the problem. So we have different killings where they claim, oh, it was a lone crazy guy with a knife. So now they're trying to ban knives, take that away from the population and so on. So in the end, we won't be able to eat with knife and forks. You know, the only thing that would be allowed are spoons. It's getting to that point. And when you look at mass shootings, I don't know how many I've looked into in the U.S. And I mean, I really, really have devoted years of my life looking into these. And I question every single one of them if there is such a thing as a real mass shooting. You know, because if it's not directly controlled by the FBI, equipped, trained by the FBI, who then cover the whole thing up and stops it. I mean, it's, well, anyway, let's go to Europe. In Europe, it's a totally different story, because in Europe, there's not the mass shooting. Here, we're talking about how to get the population to accept total control by CCTV cameras everywhere, to be observed, to be controlled through computers, through body scanners, to have these type of controls. They're trying to ban or get rid of banks now, so it's only digital currency, which is a major threat to liberty, freedom of humankind, I tell you, and so on. So here we have a different type of operation, where they want the new normal to be that we see soldiers, armed soldiers in the street. They're for our protection because of the so-called terror threats. And I don't know how many here in Europe as well that I've been to. I've been on location for many, many. I'm a one-man band. I finance myself by donations, by selling books. I mean, I'm not funded by anyone, But what I try to do is when something like this happened, I try to get there as soon as possible while the operation is still ongoing, if possible, and then see, look at the evidence, what really happened. Let's see where the evidence takes us. I mean, it's not important for me to prove that this was a false flag or this. I just want to see what happened, what the hell happened, and why, and who benefited from it. That's the whole thing. But every time I get to these locations, or I really look into them, we get back to the same story again and again and again. In the end, it's almost like I can't find the inspiration to look into it. I mean, now three things here in Europe, the same day as Trump was officially elected, and all three of them are just crap operation, really poorly pulled off. You know, there's no ambition, there's no, the people who are involved are not doing a very good job because the evidence just doesn't match up at all. You know, mm-hmm. The timeline doesn't matter, the background checks when of people involved doesn't matter, the victims, you can't find the victims, there are no funerals, there are no graves, there are no families, there's the whole thing, you know, the evidence of when the truck in Nice, for instance, is said to have killed 84 people and 202 injured. That's 286 people hit by this truck, killed, massacred, slaughtered by one truck. And there's not one drop of blood on the truck at all. There's not a dent. There's nothing. You check the tires. The tires are totally clean. They should have gone over bodies. I mean, a human body, there's a lot of things inside it that is gruesome when it comes out. Liquids, blood, fluids, whatever, you know, that will, you come, you see a normal accident in the traffic. It's a horrific sight. Here, not nothing. Every time something like this happened, the CCTV cameras get shut down. They work perfectly. We, the normal citizen, have to pay billions, billions to get all of these crap things put up everywhere so that we're controlled and looked upon, even if we go to the loo soon. And then when they're actually there to protect us, when we should see what actually happened, no, very sorry, shut down again and again and again and again. And then every time one of these things happen, there's pointed out some Muslim guy that runs around screaming Allah Akbar, lone crazy fanatic connected to ISIS, totally created by the CIA and the Mossad together. And so when you look at, I mean, now I've been spending the last few days here looking into these latest ones here in Europe. There's this truck massacre in Berlin, they claim. I mean, it's a copycat of what is said to have happened in Nice. We're back to the same. There's no blood, there's no victims. It's exactly in an extremely historical position. The location is extremely important. Nobody sees it. It's right outside a very, very famous church that is the symbol for the Second World War and all of this happened. The dates, the time, all of these things also are very much involved with numerology. And it's just the same, I would suggest. And then, like you said, in the old days, or I would say up until around 9/11, you had a lot of real victims with these Gladio attacks and so on. But I believe that after 9/11, they started seeing that, woof, this is not easy, you know, when the more we kill, the more, especially mothers, we have breathing down our necks, and they will not back down, you know, they will not give up until they find out what actually happened. So I believe somewhere after 2001, maybe 2003, 2004, somewhere around there, they came to a point where they thought, the main thing is that we get the impact, the emotional impact, out through media. So it doesn't really matter what happens on location as long as it looks real. And if we focus on media, then we can do it as like film sets, you know, that is totally locked off for normal people. Nobody can see what happens. And then we can just pump out through media globally and get the same effect without having these problems. And this is where I believe they started using very small units of, we're talking like maybe 30, 40 people in total, where we're talking so-called crisis actors, directors, marketing agencies, bouncers. These are bouncers, are the people that are standing around looking like normal pedestrians, but what they're actually doing is making sure that no person like myself or anyone else get anywhere near where the real action is. Then you have experts on explosives, smoke bombs. I mean, we're talking film effects. You got camera crew. You got the ones that makes the screenplay of what is going to happen. You know, the whole timeline story, how the whole thing is set up, and marketing agents that are there to come up with slogans like Charlie Hebdo logos. You know, with the Eiffel Tower and the flags behind, setting all of these things with lighting and the buildings and different things
set up. And these media campaigns are almost, they come out almost immediately after the event.
This is the thing. Yeah. They are on standby.
Yeah.
This is also what you will see. It is like, boom, it happens, and boom, it's there. And very often when you see the reporters, because nowadays media is so involved in it, not everyone working for media, but key people. And you will see the same key people appearing again and again and again. Anderson Cooper is one of these people that are just there all the time. You know, mm-hmm. Also CIA operative. He's admitted to that and so on. But
and also his pedigree goes back to a very wealthy family.
For sure.
Ties in who these agencies ultimately work for would be these elite, you know, connected families. You know,
I believe that it was during the church hearings when CIA director William Colby was in. He was heard, and I think it turned out that they had like at that time they had like 1,600 people in media on their payroll.
I think you're referring to 1,600.
That is a lot of people, and believe you me, that these agencies are focusing on people that makes a difference, of people in key positions. You know, not just people on the street level. They don't care about them. They are always focusing on the important ones. So you take more than 1,000 people in American media and spread out. Who are they? And these are years back. Now, when there's only like 6 corporations that owns more or less all media in the U.S., you can imagine how much they control.
And they all meet at Bilderberg or at Davos.
Yeah for sure.
This is something that you can trace. I mean, you're referring to this Operation Mockingbird, which started in the late 1940s, which basically that program is almost as old as the CIA itself, because they knew they'd have to control the media. And there was CIA OSS hand, Frank Wisner, who referred to this overall control of the media, of news, of entertainment as the mighty Wurlitzer, like he could play America like an organ. Through control of the media. And by media, we mean entertainment too. And this day and age, news and entertainment have been merged into infotainment, you know, with Fox News and the 24-hour news cycle and InfoBabes. The news is, you know, but we all know, obviously a big part of this plan is the manipulation of information and what we call news. And what we refer to now as the establishment media grew out of World War II era intelligence agencies and psychological warfare agencies like the OSS and Office of War Information. Same thing in Great Britain, too. It was all controlled, and the whole our whole perception of those events were controlled by these psychological warriors who went into CBS and ABC, like William Paley, Sarnoff, Walter Cronkite, the one who told us how it was in America for so long. These guys were all controlled agents of the intelligence agencies who work for the corporations who are, I think, corporations and elite families who are what we call the New World Order. You know, it's perception management, right? I mean, it's what Walter Lippmann talked about in Public Opinion or manufacturing consent, and Edward Bernays and these guys who are working on Wall Street. And you talk about Operation Mongoose and CIA. Of course, the name Ed Lansdale comes up. And he was a former ad man from Wall Street who went to work for the CIA undercover with the Air Force. So, I mean, and the only way you can
it
make
is.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know.
It is amazing, but when you look at it, it's very logical. It sounds so far out, but once you see that these people have been working very hard for many, many, many years on
yes.
concentrating the power to fewer and fewer and fewer. So if you had that agenda and you had the money and the power to accomplish it, how would you do it? You
yeah,
would do it exactly like they've done it.
Well,
you know?
And if you lack scruples, which... You have to become that powerful. You almost have to, I think. But it's
they don't even know how to spell that word. I tell
yeah.
you.
Oh, they're not inhibited by what we call normal morality, which is so hard for normal people to understand their machinations, because normal people are inhibited by morality, by sense of fairness, basic sense of fairness. You know, they have their foibles and faults as well, but they're not among this class, which is why some people have developed this theory about our reptilian ruling class, which is, in my opinion, more of a metaphor, because it's a psychopathic lack of empathy and sense of for their fellow man. They really have to look upon the mass of humanity as an anthill, or as cattle to be slaughtered every so often, to be exported. They're harvesting humanity, and if you're going to do that, you're going to have to have these control mechanisms set up. And like you said, if you look at it, it's very logical, and it's not like it's something we're not talking about aliens from outer space or and like that. This is just something that you would do if you were going to run the world. You would have to have these control mechanisms set up, whether it's media, whether it's financial through the central banking system and using, currency, debt-based currency as a weapon to exploit the masses. Same thing with information and news and entertainment, so it's...
It's very logical. Just like you say, I mean, instead of looking upon this as a massive mystery and like, oh, how is this possible? It is possible because they have done it, When you look at the ownerships of different corporations, what they control and so on, you will see the same people appear again and again and again and again. So it's not that it's something taken out of pure fantasy. It's there right in front of our eyes. They even... written lots of books about it, very openly describing the whole thing about how the world is a chessboard and how they just play us. They put it in Agenda 21 and other things. This is what we're going to do. They always tell us before when they do it. They tell us, well, now we're going to do this. And if we don't interfere, they carry it out. That's the whole point also to be aware of, that for some reason, it's almost like they have to tell us before they do it to get our consent. And I think I've heard from inside sources that this is one of the reasons is the way they interpret the law of karma is that if they tell us, the victim, what they're going to do to us and we do not react, then the bad karma is on our shoulders, not the predators. And I don't know, but it's like, one of the things that I really try to focus on when it comes to false flag operations and so on is that they leave clues for the next upcoming event. It's almost like there's a trailer hidden somewhere in the evidence, And I've several times I've exposed these things before they actually happen. Like the Copenhagen shooting, I went out on international radio, several different programs saying, it's going to happen in Denmark, it's going to happen here around this train station, and it's going to happen on this date. After that, it did not happen on the exact date I said. It happened exactly 1 month later on the hour around that exact location, I said. And this is not because I'm super intelligent or I have a crystal ball. It's because they do it right in our face. It's hidden in plain sight. So for when these things happen, there are clues there for us to find. And if we don't find them, they just carry it out. The next one and the next one and the next one. So fantastic, I say, because then it's just up to us. Then we take the power back and we expose their asses and stop it.
Well, this is the foil in their plan has been, the internet, which I think started out as part of their plan, and still may be part of their plan to get everyone digitized and addicted to the internet, and they can be monitored and controlled in that regard. But in one way, it's also allowed information to get out, this window of opportunity, information to get out for people like you and I to have this conversation. You're there, yeah. They're way over in Europe. I'm here in the States, and we're talking about this, and it's getting out to perhaps thousands and thousands of people who listen to this and maybe think about it. And that's one thing maybe that they didn't foresee, or maybe they did, and they're considering it a cost they have to bear in the meantime. I don't know, the specifics of what the overall agenda may be, but again, what's important here is explaining just how controlled the mainstream media is, the press, the information, the news they get. And they do coordinate with things like Hollywood and television, because certain memes and agendas are promoted through Hollywood, certain ideas, because most people's idea of history is through Hollywood. So they have to control that avenue too. And if you do the research, those connections are definitely there. A good example is we mentioned the media, and it's very easy once you establish a few networks to put these people on their payroll, and you only have to hire a few people and a few editors here and there. I think as early as back as 1917 here in the United States, I think we had a Senator Oscar Calloway who read on the Senate floor talking about how J.P. Morgan had bought up a dozen newspapers on the East Coast that controlled pretty much the news feed throughout the country. And by buying up these newspapers, they were able to control the news cycle or people's perception of what was going on to facilitate America's entry into the First World War that was then raging. And this was done for the benefit of the Anglo-American elite, the Wall Street financial interests that had backed the Anglo-French war effort. And it also served the interest of the Zionists at the time, because of course they comprised a large part of the financial elite, because getting America into the war was a large part of the fulfillment of the promises made in the Balfour Declaration, which would eventually lead to the creation of the Israeli state after World War II, which looks more now like a contrived or at least manipulated event. So this is how important it is. I mean, in it to control people's perception of what's going on is you got to control the media. And that's how you get these stage events, correct? Because if there's no investigation of this event, you can pull off a sort of a hackneyed, fake event and have it be as shoddy as you want. And if it's not reported on, and for those people like you or other people, researchers who call out the fake news or the fakery involved, if you're just disregarded as conspiracy theorists and nuts, it can be disregarded and not much effort has to be put into it.
First of all, conspiracy theorist is a term that was created by the CIA right after they were part of assassinating JFK. Mm-hmm. It was a term that was created to use against any critical mind that was pointing fingers and starting to dig too deep, to disregard them. And it's come to a point, if you say conspiracy, your mind would say theory. Most people's will, it's so connected. But I'm so not interested in theories. I'm only trying to find out the facts. So when we come to media, I used to work as a journalist, and I did not feel controlled at all. I was not working on a major newspaper. I was working on a sort of like medium scale type of newspaper. I only felt controlled at one single event. And fair enough. I mean, the editor said no. It was about a family story, blah, blah, blah. So I could respect that. At the same time, years later, when I was doing up in Stockholm trying to uncover what happened with Olof Palme, about 8 years after the assassination, there was a German documentary about the assassination of Olof Palme that was absolutely incredible. It was called The Murder in Stockholm. You can find it on YouTube now. Okay, it was awarded the best documentary of the year in Germany, Italy, and France, as far as I remember, and not shown in Sweden. So I thought, wow, this is incredible. So I had it on a VHS cassette that somebody sent me from Germany. I went at that time. I was also working as a freelance musician for TV4, doing jingles and stuff. So I went to. They had a special department there for. It was called Cold Facts. The program. It was like the most highest esteemed program looking into stuff. Deep digging journalism. So I thought, these guys would be the perfect place to get this aired. So I went there. Since I was working there, I managed to get to the people in charge, and I said, listen, I've got this video. It's about the assassination of Olof Palme. And they said, okay. They said, is it about Christer Pettersson, which is the patsy that went down for this whole thing? I said, no, it's about an international team behind it, where Swedes are involved, Swedish police officers, where they name some of the people, just like I do with hundreds of people in my book, names, photos, everything. That was in this documentary as well. Some of the names were filmed there. I said, no, no, but it's excellent. It's won prizes and so on. So here, please watch it. And he said, being one of the most highly respected journalists in Sweden, he said, no, thank you. We, as a company, we've had to agree on a certain sort of direction when it comes to this assassination, since there are so many different theories. So we've decided to focus on the main patsy. That's not his wording, but that was what he said. And I said, but listen, you're a journalist. Here is the tape. You watch it. If you think it's crap, there's the waste paper. Dump it in the garbage. If you think it's good, air it. He said, no, I don't even want to see it. Mm-hmm. At that point, that was mind-boggling for me, because I just couldn't get it. Then another time, I went back to the newspaper where I worked, and at that this summer, this specific summer, there was a woman there working who had received the highest award a journalist in Sweden could get. So I went up to her and said, she came and said, how are you doing? And so, because we knew each other a little bit. And she said, so what are you up to now? And I said, I'm really trying to uncover what happened to the Swedish prime minister. Oh, that's really interesting, she said. I said, okay, have you got 15 minutes? I'll buy you a cup of coffee. I'll tell you. She said, yeah, great. So we had a cup of coffee. I started talking. After 5 minutes, she stopped me and said, I don't want to hear anymore. And I said, why? And she said, because if what you say is true, I have to write about it. And I said, yes, that is sort of your job. And she said, no, I can't hear anymore. And she left. And I just felt, what kind of invisible wall am I up against? And this is the wall that I have been up against the last 30 years. It's like an invisible wall. When you get too close to these type of national secrets, you're just met by absolute silence, or you get eliminated. You know, they do stuff to you. They discredit you. They destroy you. Just like you said before, they destroy your career. If you keep pushing, hit and run, you're found in a bathtub, drowned, fully dressed. You commit suicide, these type of things, or suddenly your computer ends up with 16,000 pictures of pedophile pictures. You know, that your computer in your workstation is suddenly pumped with these, or in your bank account suddenly there's $1 million there that you can't explain where did they come from. You know, this is one of the things they do. They just put money in your account, say, my God, how did you get this money? You go down financially in the courts and everything, and they just take the money out again. Or they pump your computer and totally destroy your reputation. And it's just being repeated again and again. And I just also want to say that in Sweden, you cannot see this network. How is the media controlled? But all chief editors, as far as I know, they do their military service every year, connected to what is called the psychological defense of Sweden. And the people involved in the official investigation of the Olof Palme assassination is the psychological defense of Sweden. And the one that really started looking into the sinking of MS Estonia, that killed almost 1,000 people, being blown up where the explosives, I've even got photos of the explosives on the ship, and they're not interested, even though they officially say that they know about these whole thing, are also all of them connected to the Swedish psychological defense. And their task is to divert the attention of the nation into a direction that is the best for national security. What does that mean? whose security? The people of Sweden, the people of your country, or their security? That's why every time it says top secret or national security, it's their security they're talking about. They don't want us, the normal person, to find out what they are up to. And I say total transparency. That is what I don't think. These corridors of power, let them be without doors, you know, so that anyone can walk in at any time. Let all the accounts be totally open so no people can have access. These governments are working for us. We are paying them. And what we created instead is some kind of monster that is controlling us. It's time to take the power back, turn it around. These people should be, you know, really in a position where they obey us, where they do for our good, for the good of the nation, not for their good. And their criminal friends in Freemasonry links and these type of things, or Bilderberg or the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, these hidden networks, they should not be allowed to exist, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned things like Freemasonry and secret societies, and of course what Freemasonry is and what secret societies are is it's a way of networking and operating on a high level and carrying out high criminality and malfeasance against the general public, and at the same time being able to having the relations and networks that enable this group of people to infiltrate governmental and corporate institutions and steer them in their interest against the general public. And if you doubt that, just it played a big part in the British Empire and how the British were able to suborn other governments and British intelligence and some of their intrigues on the continent. And some people suggest even as far back as the French Revolution, British Freemasonry was a big part of that in subverting the French monarchy. You know, but secret societies, intelligence agencies are secret societies, and they operate under these secret society rules of rings within rings, and need to know and compartmentalization. It's a principle of operation. Whether if it's not ideational, it's certainly operate. It's not operational. It's certainly ideational, meaning that it's a model, for how to secretly control a society. That's why you mentioned the Gladio operation that's been exposed. It was the P2 Lodge, this Masonic Lodge in Italy, which played a big part in that, because it basically enabled a handful of people to operate a parallel government, and of course organized crime, like the classical mafia is organized under what can be described as Freemasonic principles of secret oaths and blood oaths and things like that. So it's a way to engage in organized crime, and we get that with the Skull and Bones, which of course forms the backbone of the U.S. intelligence community. And that's what the CIA developed out of, or OSS, which became CIA, was Yale, Skull and Bones, and these things. So if you do your research, this isn't woo-woo weird stuff. There's a real history there, serious history stuff, and serious scholars have scoped these things out.
It's the same. History is repeating itself over and over and over again. But the beauty of all of this is that all of these things can only exist and work in the dark. If we aim the spotlight at it, if we expose it totally nonviolent, but just letting truth do the work by putting a spotlight right up their butt and showing this is what's going on, they cannot function. All type of criminality is in the dark. They cannot exist and carry it out or continue the way they have if we are aware of it. So that is why it's so important to these type of programs to spread the information and get more and more people to open their eyes and see what's going on so that we can get the power back.
And it also suggests that contrary to what they claim, is the world isn't this crazy, wild place of violent people that need to be controlled. I think you've made this point where if it is indeed a small group that are pulling these things off and manipulating humanity for their narrow interests, that the solution is just exposure and sunlight. And if you get rid of these few people, you can have a much better world, peaceful world.
I tell you, when you see how few they are, and behind so much mayhem, if when you see how many we are, I mean, it is ridiculous that we even having this discussion. They're in the thousands. I'm telling you, I have pinpointed many, many of them. They're in the thousands. We are billions. I don't know how good you are at math, but it's like thousands and billions. There's a massive difference. And how we can let them control us just because they have fancy clothes and fancy cars and lots of money in the bank account or create their own money, whatever, we call them powerful. But when you look at it, like what they're doing to us, how they're killing us in so many ways, or destroying nature, destroying the sea, destroying the air, destroying us, destroying our children. Isn't it time to wake up and say, this is not on, you know? I don't agree with this. I don't want this.
Yes. It goes back to, I guess, the allegory of the cave, Plato. And they'll, the mass of humanity is still, watching shadows on the wall. And the difficult thing is if you peer outside the cave and see what's really going on, is those people inside the cave have traditionally not taken a kind attitude towards that, because people want their illusions,
And it is a painful awakening. Yeah. I'm painfully sort of on a daily basis on learning stuff that I thought I knew, and I'm just finding out, oh my God, that as well? Are you kidding me? And it's not. Just follow the evidence. Follow it back, find out what actually happened, who was behind it, who benefits, cui bono, who benefits from these things. And you will find it slowly, slowly, you will get back to the same group again and again and again. And the perfect way of describing this situation is the Wizard of Oz, where this massive, massively powerful wizard is up in this castle that nobody dares to enter, except Dorothy and her little dog. They enter, and there's this extremely frightful voice that are trying to terrorize them into obedience. But which the only thing she wants is to get back to Oklahoma, where her life was in beauty and balance and harmony. Just get back home. And so while she's one of the few that dares to stand up, she notices that there's cable going in under the curtain. She goes up, pull away the curtain, and who is there? A massive monster with forces and powers of incredible magnitude? No, a tiny little old guy with a big microphone and a massive amplifier screaming, "I'm powerful and you're weak." That is them. You turn off the amplifier, they have nothing. Most of them are old guys in their 70s, 80s, stuff like that. They have, but they've got all these massive weapons and advanced technology. They wouldn't be able to fit a USB memory into a laptop if you didn't do it for them, And then you say, we're doing it to ourselves. We are doing it. We are controlling. We are doing all of these things. We're surveilling each other. We're controlling each other. We're guarding each other. It's sick. It is really, really bizarre.
Yeah, the best weapon in the hands of the slave master is the mind of the slave, as someone once said. So,
yeah, and that mind is being told, you're free, you're free, you're free, as long as you do exactly what I tell you to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Henry Ford said, you can paint the Fords any color you want, as long as they're black.
Yes.
We're there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do anything you want as long as you pay your mortgage. And by the way, mortgage, do you know what that word actually means? It's a French word. It's mortage. It means death. It means death. And it's not taken just out of nowhere why they use that word. The Swedish and Danish word for debt is guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Feel guilt. If you have this, you're guilty. You're guilt. That using these things, among many, many others, to keep us down with our heads down so that we will not have the force to just lift our head, open our eyes, and see what's going on. They need us down with the head in the mud, in total fear. You know, so
yeah. You basically, you want to be desperate, hungry, or fearful of losing what job you have, or falling into poverty, keeping you busy with your job, making you remain overworked. So when you get home, all you want to do is want to sit back and slink back in your couch and watch whatever psychological warfare the TV has to dish out to you. So you never really have a moment of conscious thought or reflection, or to talk about these things with your family and friends. So they give you all these little gadget devices that occupy your time, whether it's television or smart devices, and not to mention all the other toxicities that they're pumping into you, whether it's through the medicine, the food, or the air itself. You know,
one thing is that they do not want you to get hungry. You know, that's because then you have a revolution. They have a revolution on their hand. So they keep you exactly where you're not hungry, but all the rest, so that, thank God I can feed my family. Yeah, that's where they want you. But they will feed you. You will have to feed them cheap crap that just makes you a beast and totally devastated as a human being. And then you're in control.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, their game is very, very easy once you start seeing it. And since it's very easy once you start seeing how it's done, it should also be easy for us to get back in the real game and take the power back. And I would say the main thing, the main weapon they're using against us is fear. It is through fear that they control us. So if you don't know anything else about what you can do, focus on becoming fearless. Through meditation, through helping, selfless service, to understanding that, well, I'm going to die anyway, so I might as well maybe do something good with my life, so that the day that I say, okay, fine, it's time for me to leave this earth, I will feel proud. I will feel that I really made a difference, that I stood up for something beautiful and good. Or you can die feeling ashamed of what you've been up to and how you let your children and people around you down just because you were fearful.
Mm-hmm.
So fear, please be aware, when something happens and they say, oh my God, there's a new mass shooting, there's a new this, there's a new that, before you react and go into, oh my God, the whole world is filled with terrorists, it's so horrible, Muslims should be executed, all of them, before you go into this fear or hate mode, take a step back, take a deep breath, maybe go for a little walk around the block, come back, ask yourself, who benefits from me believing what I just saw? And they want you to think that the whole world is in total chaos, that there are terrorists everywhere, bombs everywhere, that you're being under attack from all kinds of directions. Look out the window and tell me what you see. 99% of you, the listeners, will look out through the window and it will be calm out there. Nature will be beautiful. The sun will be warming and wonderful to be in. Your neighbors will be nice people and so on. Most people live like that. But when you put on the box, that is the weapon, this black box in front of you. That is how they get it. I have not had a TV for the last 12, 30 years, something like that, because the way I see this black, beautifully designed so-called smart TV, that is a sewage entrance into your living room, into the lives of your children. You even put them in front of it to, as a baby, what do you call it, a baby watch or babysitter or something like that.
Yep.
It is designed as sewage for your mind to keep your head down. So the best thing with a TV, I mean, I love watching films, and so, I'm not saying that, absolutely not, but nowadays you can handpick things on the internet that you want, or documentaries that you checked out, the sources and so on, something you can, that are trustworthy. The beauty of this thing is the remote control, I think, because on the remote there's this magic button. It's normally red and it says off. press it and see how long you can take. I mean, there will be withdrawals. Maybe you will get some shaking. You will start saying, oh my God, I'm not feeling good. I'm nervous. I'm not. It's part of the rehab, sort of what you go through. But once again, take a walk. Fresh air is wonderful. Look around you, maybe discover that, my God, I've got a family. You know, maybe we should have dinner together. Maybe we should talk to each other and just sitting in front of this black box. It's designed to destroy you. And start seeing, you know, what can I do instead of spending 8 hours a day in front of this box? What can I do with this time? And this is where I think the way to get the power back is to do selfless things, selfless service, things where you don't expect something in return. Just do good, be good, get the power back, you know, by doing wonderful things around you. Become an inspiration for people, become an inspiration in the community. Just help and enjoy, you know, get the words back, you know, the power of words like honor and kindness, gentleness, these type of beautiful things that have been destroyed now, where people go around with t-shirts very proud saying slut and bad and I don't know what else, you know, where when you look at, I'm sorry, I'll go on ranting.
You're pointing out this sort of this weaponized pop culture that has been created by these mega media corporations. And you're right. It's sort of this degradation of society that we've all witnessed, largely promoted by these corporations, you know, whether it's Disney or Hollywood or, you know, and the key to that is just shutting off these devices that occupy so much of our time. And you find yourself just having more free time and just your brain being cleared. You're not being fried by these devices anymore. But, you know, so, you know, you're right.
Do you know the word brainwashing? I love that. You know, it's exactly what we need to do. We need to give our brain a good rinse, a good cleansing, you know, wash the brain because we have been infected by so much crap under such a long time. So give it a good clean by not pumping it all the time, by running, get fresh in air in there, pump the circulation, pump the body, you know, do things with it, do something that really matters. By, for instance, helping, you know, random acts of kindness, these type of good things. And I just want to say that people that think that kindness is weakness, that is a misunderstanding. It has been turned into that. Real kindness is power. Real love is power. Real power, you know, the thing that can make a mother pull off a car from a child underneath and some, that type of love, the highest form of love, the love that all of us should feel for this world, for this love, for this life that we have.
Yes, yeah.
Take the power back by putting the focus on things that matters. Turn off the box. Don't let it do it to you. I mean, once you wake up to the fact of what is going on, if you understood that on the other end of that black box, I mean, you follow the cables out, you follow the antenna out. If you knew that there were child killing, child molesting, sexual abusers, violent rapists, serial killers, people that warmongers, that terrorizes populations, that they are in the other end controlling what's coming in, would you keep it on? Just a question. If that, because I'm telling you, that is who they are.
Yes.
The people controlling in the other end are these people. Do the research. On the internet, there is so much about it. You can find anything nowadays that you want. I've done, I don't know how, hundreds and hundreds of interviews where I've tried to break down in great detail, step by step by step, or these different false flags or these different weapons that are used, being used against us, to try and just say, wake up, please, please, wake up. You're hurting yourself. You're hurting your children. You're hurting Mother Earth. We need to stop this. We're being raped, and nobody seems to notice. You know, and then you say, you complain that you're not feeling good. No wonder.
Yeah, you're eating McDonald's and watching television. When do I not feeling good?
At least watch something good, some whatever it is, but handpick it and get away from the commercials, because they are so designed as well to mess up your mind.
Oh yeah, pushing all the pharmaceuticals and stuff, you know. So, especially when you watch the news channels, it's all paid for by the big pharma or Lockheed Martin. So you have war and drugs being pushed. So, well, Ole, I think we covered a lot in our discussion. Obviously, we can't get into the detail of some of these conspiracies and events and assassinations that your research, that your many lectures and talks, and of course your book covers. So I urge people to avail themselves of your various lectures they can find on YouTube, various interviews, to get a full understanding of your research and the theory you present here. That it is it has much validity to it, I believe, because the evidence is there. And of course, your book, which is now, you can get it in two volumes from Amazon, I believe.
Yeah, I've written several books, but the one you're talking about is called Coup d'etat in slow motion. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why it's in two parts is because it would have been too thick a book to keep, you know, it's 900 pages. Mm-hmm. Very detailed, with names and photos and everything, even connecting the assassination of Olof Palme with many, many of these other big events like the Iran-Contras, even the JFK assassination, the assassination of John Lennon and so on, where there were actual people in Dealey Plaza taking part of the assassination of JFK. There were on location in Stockholm 23 years later taking him out. I mean, we're talking several very direct connection, and George Bush is all over the place in this assassination as well.
Yeah, I think in your book, I think you track, was it Michael Townley?
He
pops up at these various places.
Yeah, and Michael Townley's controller was David Attlee Phillips, the same controller of the Harvey Oswald and of James Files, the shooter behind the picket fence. You see, it's the same. And Chip Tatum, who was an assassin, he was the commander of Pegasus, an ultra-secret hit team under George Bush Sr.'s direct control for years. He was part of taking out 17 people in the Western world. And he said that the world of assassins is very, very small. He says, to get skilled in that area, not many people can do that. You need very specific qualities, of course, like no conscience and, and being very cold and so on. He said, it is not by coincidence that you keep repeating, that you keep bumping into the same people, because they have used them again and again. And I saw an interview once with a guy that was involved in this, and he got that exact question, why do you use the same people? And he said, he was laughing, and he said, why change a winning team?
Yes, exactly. I can appreciate the logic, yeah. And it goes back to the media again, because if the recognized organs of journalism that we're supposed to rely on, like the New York Times or the Washington Post or ABC News or CBS, would have the resources to investigate these things, and apparently the prestige. But the problem is, if you do the research on these institutions, they're all controlled, whether it's New York Times or Washington Post. Washington Post is an organ of the CIA, and still is, because now it's owned by Jeff Bezos of Amazon. But he has connections to the intelligence agencies. But same with the New York Times, and same with, as I've mentioned earlier, the networks all came out of these intelligence agencies. So we can't rely on these institutions for information. They're not. There's a general attitude out there that the media is there, the mainstream media is there to save us time, to summarize the world events, to put it in a package that we can digest and understand, so we can go out into the world relatively informed. That is a complete lie. It's there to misinform you, to direct you, to manipulate you, and control you. You know, and that's what people have to understand. It's all a psychological warfare.
I tell you, at this point in time, everything more or less is upside down. Black is white, white is black. Good is bad, bad is good. You know, so whatever they call it, whatever it's called, just for fun, try and say the exact opposite. Name it the exact opposite. It's for education. No, it's to destroy education. It's for your health. No, it's to destroy your health. It's for your protection. No, it's to terrorize you. You know, then you will get a more better understanding. So just for fun, play around with these words.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Operation Liberation, Operation Freedom, when it comes to the military. Absolutely not. It's death and destruction. It is, you know, rape and plunder. These are the correct words.
Yeah, it's like Orwellian. It's Orwellian understanding of the world. Sorry, yeah. That book, 1984, tells us so much about our current world today. And it was sort of, he was, whether he was predicting or prescribing, I don't know. But George Orwell, Eric Blair, had some insight and information about what was going on in the world. And wrote about it, and you know, and all that novel is dystopian, and it may not happen exactly the way it does in the book. Like you said, everything, the ministry of love really is the ministry that tortures you. The ministry of justice is the ministry that actually dispenses injustice and enslaves you. The ministry of peace is the ministry of war. Like, you know, so that's, you're right, exactly. Just reverse everything, and you'll get a better understanding. So
it's like you've got a defense industry. Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, at least in the old days they called it the Department of War. You'd at least
that's more honest.
Yeah, and it's ironically when they called it the Department of War, we had much less war.
But there you go.
Right, Congress doesn't declare war anymore, but we're in a state of constant. You're
liberating countries.
We're liberating countries, and so they're extending, fighting for freedom around the globe. Yep. Operation Freedom.
Tim, can I just say that it's been a real pleasure being on your program. Anytime you want me back on, any topic you want to cover, I'll be most happy to go into great detail.
Yeah, whatever. But a lot of these things require that.
Anything I can do to make a difference, count me in.
Well, thank you.
And if anybody thinks that I'm doing the right thing or wants to support me, please, there are donation buttons on my website. It's called lightonconspiracies.com. Mm-hmm. Light on Conspiracies. It's plural because there's much more than one going on, .com. And that is also really describing what I'm trying to do, to aim the light into the darkest of the dark of the, in the belly of the beast, and expose it with light, with pure nonviolent light. Just let the truth do the work.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, like you say, on YouTube there are hundreds of interviews. Just go search my name, Ole Damegaard, or my website. I've got membership there as well. The only way I finance this is through my newsletter, my membership, or my books. I've got several on Amazon. You can find that under my name as well.
Mm-hmm. And Ian, when we talk about cutting off turning off the television, cutting off your cable TV, I often say in these interviews that the one thing you can do is the money you save by not paying these corporations to pollute your mind and your children's minds and just, you know, wage psychological warfare against you. The money you save when you cut off the TV is you can send some of those savings to supporting researchers like yourself. Because whether it's $5 here and there, $5 a month here and there, if you get a whole lot of people doing that, researchers like yourself will have the resources to devote more time into this stuff. So people, you know, can read your stuff and take in the information and draw whatever conclusions they may, but they'll be better informed. And that's really how you get around this corporatist model that has monopolized news on behalf of the New World Order is sort of the crowdfunding model. Why we still have these opportunities, we should avail ourselves of it and make the most of it. You know, so.
I totally agree. Take the power back, because nobody knows how long we're going to be in this situation where we have the internet. I mean, they really want to shut it down for us and just make it commercialized, I tell you. So if we don't do anything about it, they'll just shut us down and shut us up. And if we lose the internet, I don't know how we're going to be able to conquer this thing. So we're all in the same boat. We all got different roles to play. And I tell you, if you don't respect me as a researcher, choose somebody else, where all the researchers that I know are more or less in the same position. I mean, if you want to make fame and fortune, you're in the wrong place, I tell you. This is hard work, and all of us are really on our knees financially, just trying to do our best. So, whatever. But just like you say, there is a way of letting your money talk as well. Stop giving them these big corporations. If you stop buying, if you stop sponsoring them and their products, they will change. is so wake up in all different areas.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'm going to let you go because I know you said you had another interview scheduled, and I want to give you somewhat of a break, give your voice a break, and sit back and relax and be able to reflect and think about before you do your next show. I know these shows can be very tiring. I really appreciate you coming on so much, spending so much time with me, and we'll talk again soon, and I'll follow your work. Thank you.
It's an absolute pleasure, Tim, especially speaking to you, that I feel you've got a lot of knowledge and understanding for this area, which is fantastic. I really respect that. So thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome, and thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Come and talk about the things we did today. Hear and laugh about our funny little ways while we have a few minutes to breathe. And I know that it's time you must leave, but darling, be home soon. I couldn't bear to wait an extra minute if you doubt, my darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I tired for the great relief of having you to talk to. And now a quarter of my life is almost past. I think I come to see myself at last, and I see that the time spent confused was the time that I spent without you. And I feel myself in blue. So darling, just darling, be home soon. I couldn't bear to wait an extra minute to double. My darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I tired for the great relief of having you to talk to. Go and beat your crazy heads against the sky. Try and see beyond the houses and your eyes. It's okay to shoot the moon. Just darling, my darling, be home soon. I couldn't bear to wait an extra minute if you double. My darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I tired for the great relief of having you to talk to.